Welcome back to The Horse Race, your weekly look at politics, policy, and elections in Massachusetts. I'm Steve Gazzella, president of the Mass and Cuomo Group.
And I'm Stephanie Murray, author of the Politico Massachusetts Playbook. And we are coming at you from our super sophisticated, very fancy at-home podcasting studios. They're equipped with the latest gadgets. I am sitting here in my living room with a blanket on my head to make my sound better. What about you, Steve?
Yes, I am tucked underneath. I have a shirt over my head between me and the computer screen, which keeps falling down. I can actually see the script or talk into the microphone. So nothing but the finest here in the Horse Race Global Media Empire. Of course, we have bought multi-$1,000 studios for each and every one of our hosts. And that's where we're coming at you from today. Because, of course, we're in stay-at-home mode.
That's right. And we're doing it all for you, our dear listeners. We have been social distancing from each other for quite a while. I haven't seen you in a long time, Steve, but I'm hearing you now.
Yeah, it does feel like it's been a long time. I remember walking by when you and Jen were doing what we knew would be the last one in the studio for a while, and it felt like something was going on hold, which I guess is a decent metaphor for where the world's been. But there are key questions that we need to ask about being in quarantine. And one of them, Stephanie, which you put in that I'm supposed to ask you, is should Stephanie Murray buy a Nintendo Switch and play Animal Crossing instead of using Twitter 13 hours a day?
I mean, this is just a big existential question. And I decided that I wanted to get a Nintendo Switch, and now they're all sold out literally everywhere. So I'm just stuck on Twitter for now.
So it probably says something about me and my stage in life that I don't know what a Nintendo Switch is. And instead, my kids and I are replaying the entire Lego Star Wars series on the Nintendo Wii, which is, 20 years old or something like that at this point. But it seems like the answer is yes for you. Like, you definitely should get a Nintendo Switch when they're available again. It just seems like the right thing to do.
I think it does, too. But, I mean, maybe I'll pull out my Wii and I can play alongside you guys somehow. That might be fun instead of you homeschooling your kids.
That's right. That is actually the main thing that's going on here is that I have three daughters, and we've opened a homeschool downstairs in what used to be the playroom. And my wife, who is a teacher, is much to my kids' chagrin, keeping school open and keeping school going. I guess maybe they thought that they were going to get out of school for a little while, but no such luck. Right back to school they go. But then there's also the question, of course, of what have you been watching since the quarantine began? I know that you were like right on the precipice of finishing up Love is Blind when we all had to go into lockdown. So where are we with that? Give us the updates, Stephanie.
Oh, God. I finished Love is Blind, and I see why everybody loved it and was glued to it. I just found it so cringeworthy. I almost couldn't enjoy it. And I'm hoping that the singing Bachelor, Listen to Your Heart, where they're all singers, but it's also kind of like The Bachelor, will be better for me. Steve, are you going to watch that show?
Wait, is that an actual Bachelor thing? Like the Bachelor contestants are going to have to sing, or is it a totally different show that just resembles The Bachelor?
I think Chris Harrison is on it. It's like a Bachelor spinoff.
Oh my goodness, that sounds amazing. I wish that I could say that I probably would watch it, but actually, you know what? If you and Jen shame me enough into it, I will do it. We'll live tweet it just like we did Love is Blind. Let's make it happen.
You've got some time on your hands, but I think we should move on to some more serious stuff before we just talk about The Bachelor for an hour. The coronavirus pandemic, it's just this rapidly evolving situation in Massachusetts. Governor Charlie Baker issued a stay-at-home advisory a couple of days ago that went into effect on Tuesday. He ordered all non-essential businesses closed. There are over 1,000 cases of coronavirus in Massachusetts and a handful of deaths. I mean, there's still a lot that we don't know, but those are the things that we know right now.
Yeah, that's a sort of brings up what's been one of the things that I've been harping on for the last few days is just how little we actually know about how many people have coronavirus in Massachusetts. I said it on Twitter, so I may as well say it on the podcast, that I've actually had the symptoms that everybody describes for the last week or so, I guess now almost 10 days, complete with the sore throat, the dry cough, all of that, and tried pretty much as soon as it happened to get tested. I called our primary care provider, as you're supposed to do. They transferred me to a hospital who transferred me to an emergency room who said I should call my primary care provider. We did that a couple more times, and in each case, when we actually did get to talk to someone, we're told there just aren't tests unless you meet a certain set of criteria. So that was the first thing that made me think, we don't actually really know how many people have this. The next thing that made me think that is how many people I've heard from since I put that tweet out that describe similar kinds of experiences where maybe they had it recently or they had it even weeks ago, where, you know, they had a similar set of symptoms, but, you know, we didn't really know what we were supposed to be looking for. We didn't know what we were supposed to be testing for. So I think the thing that I take away from all of that is that we don't know how many people in Massachusetts have coronavirus today. We don't know how many people had it last week or 2 weeks ago. We can see that the numbers of confirmed cases are going up, but in terms of the actual total numbers, I think we just should admit we don't actually know.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you haven't been feeling well, Steve, and even more sorry to hear that you had to navigate all of that bureaucracy when you were feeling like garbage, but sounds like you're on the mend now, which I'm happy to hear.
Yes, I do feel much better now, mercifully, so it didn't make the first week of quarantine quite as fun as I guess maybe it could have been if I'd just been sitting around drinking quarantinis and, you know, catching up on The Bachelor, but I am coming out. But anyway, so moving on to the impacts on the kinds of things that we tend to keep track of. So let's start with the State House. Stephanie, you've been keeping track of what Governor Baker's been saying about the loan fund that they put out and also the rainy day fund. Give us an update on just where the state's finances are and what that means for businesses trying to navigate this new reality.
I mean, right now, the state's finances are just a big question mark. The legislature and Governor Baker have tried to do a few things to kind of keep things afloat right now. They put up a $10 million small business loan fund for small businesses to use to recover after this. I think they closed it to applicants after 2 or 3 days because they filled up so quickly. They did another $10 million. They did a $15 million fund to respond to coronavirus. But it seems like kind of the pace and the scope of how big this problem is just too large for one state to handle. And Governor Baker said that at his press conference on Tuesday, that, you know, the state gets its revenue and they do the budget and that's what they've got. But the only entity that can really spend more money in a time like this is the federal government. And so we've seen Baker kind of put some pressure on the Senate to make a deal, which they did. Right now, I haven't seen what's in the bill yet. I'm not sure anybody has, but he was really frustrated that the Senate hadn't done a deal on the economic stimulus bill, $2 trillion bill to get things kind of back on track or try to. So this is, to me, it's like one of those scenarios where Massachusetts usually tries to just kind of operate counter to the federal government. We're proud here that we don't do the same kind of partisan gridlock that Washington does, or Governor Baker's proud of that. But we're kind of at the mercy of Washington right now.
Yeah, we're seeing that from a lot of governors across the country where, you know, typically they might be able to take their own action or, you know, do things on their own, acquire their own supplies. A, they don't have the capacity financially to do so, and B, in terms of acquiring supplies, they're actually competing with each other. So Governor Baker has been very critical of the gridlock in Washington, and he, I think, like everybody's hoping that something soon will emerge that can help each state with dealing with all the different problems that they're dealing with. But again, back here in Massachusetts, the other thing, of course, that we keep track of on this podcast is elections. Elections, for the most part, have been put on hold for a while, just due to the dangers of and the risks of just gathering together in a polling place, coming in and using a pen someone else might have used, or, you know, interacting with other people, touching doors, touching voting booths, and that sort of thing. So elections, for the most part, have been delayed. Stephanie, quickly catch us up on what's all happened so far and where and when the elections might happen going forward.
So where we are right now, we had a few special elections set for March 31st for a couple of state House and state Senate seats. The legislature has passed a bill to move those elections further down the road. And that's because, you know, there are just so many, like you said, Steve, so many kind of variables, using the same pen, using the same voting booth. I mean, even the people who run the elections, who go and take your ballot when you go vote, a lot of those people are elderly and at risk of getting this virus. So they moved all of that. But the big question mark now is the signature gathering process. And so to get on the ballot for the September statewide primary, you need a certain number of signatures. If you're running for Congress, it's like 2,000. For Senate, it's 10,000. And a lot of candidates who are trying to get on the ballot are sounding the alarm, saying it isn't safe for us to go send volunteers out to get signatures, to share a clipboard, to share a pen, to even have people within 6 feet of each other passing a piece of paper back and forth. So they're putting pressure on the legislature, and they want them to give Secretary of State Bill Galvin bigger election powers so he could maybe move the signature deadline or decrease it, postpone it. But they haven't done anything yet. I think that's coming within the next week if they decide to do something to change it.
And when would they have to submit signatures by? And is there any talk of doing anything online, or are we just talking about reducing the burden for in-person signatures?
So they need to submit signatures in May, and then they have to get their kind of nominating, the signatures have to be certified by town clerks, and then all of like the nominating papers get wrapped up by June, I think it's June 2nd. And there has been some talk about gathering signatures online, but until the legislature kind of reveals what kind of deals they're making, we won't know what direction they're going to move in, if they do at all.
All right. Well, certainly a lot to keep track of there. And I think my thoughts are certainly with all the candidates that are trying to navigate this new landscape. And actually, we're going to talk to one of them a little bit later, Becky Grossman, one of the candidates running in the big Massachusetts 4th Congressional District primary to replace Joe Kennedy, will be joining us by the magic of technology a little bit later to talk about what campaigning is like in this new reality. But then before we get to that, we have just released a new round of the tracking poll we've been doing on coronavirus issues with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. So we'll walk through some of the results of that before we get to talking to Becky Grossman.
All right, let's get to it. Across the country, state and city leaders are issuing stay-at-home orders in an effort to slow the spread of coronavirus and keep hospitals from becoming overwhelmed. But are people listening? We tell each other to stay home and stay safe, but I mean, how long do we think that's going to last? Here to answer all of those questions and more is the president of the MassInc Polling Group and the crown prince of COVID-19 public opinion polling, our very own Steve Cazella. Steve, thank you for switching hats from host to guest, and I have a lot of questions for you.
Thank you. That's a very dark title that I was just assigned, but I appreciate it. So let's get into the poll.
So, I mean, first, before we get started, kind of walk us through the structure of the poll, because it's not just a one-time publication. How is this different?
So this is a tracking poll, meaning that we basically ask the same set of questions several times in a row and see how they've changed. So we're running this poll over the course of 3 weeks. It's being sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. And what we'll be doing is releasing the data from 3 or 4 or 5 nights at a time and looking at how the numbers are changing. So, for instance, one of the things we can see with the second release, which is just done over the last few days, is that more and more people are getting the message on social distancing. So they're doing more things like going shopping less, they're washing their hands more, they're not doing as many physical greetings like handshakes and hugs, basically getting the message on social distancing even more than they did late last week. So that's how I think quickly this reaction and opinion and just personal behavior is changing in relation to all of this.
That's really interesting. I think it's great to have a tracking poll where, I mean, last week at this point seems like a year ago. So how far have people shifted on that social distancing, Steve? How much greater is the percentage of people who are doing it or say that they're doing it?
Right. So, I mean, it depends on the question that you're looking at. So we've asked about a number of different actions. Like, let's start with personal visits. So are you not seeing or visiting anyone, just a few people? Are you seeing or visiting many people? On that question, the number who say, I'm not seeing or visiting anyone, has climbed from 46% just through this past Thursday, and now it's up to 60% in the poll that ran through Monday. So, I mean, that's the extent to which things are just changing day to day. It's kind of remarkable when you step back and just think about, we're basically changing everything about society in the course of a couple weeks. You know, how you shop, which is another number that's changed. There we've got 3/4 of people now saying they're only going shopping if it's essential. Another 11% saying they're not going at all. So social visits, shopping, how much people are washing their hands, how people are greeting each other. Everything about society has changed just in the last couple of weeks. And I, you know, we've got the numbers and everything, but I think it's just kind of important and sobering to remember that these are all massive changes that we've asked people to undertake just in the last couple of weeks.
So, I mean, what comes along with those massive changes is kind of just how people are feeling. So what's the vibe among Massachusetts residents? Are people growing increasingly concerned, increasingly afraid about the coronavirus?
Well, they're not growing impatient, I'll say that. They don't think we've gone too far, and they don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. We asked whether people thought the response in their area has gone too far, or if it's just about right, or if it hasn't gone far enough. And the very large majority say it's either been about right or it hasn't gone far enough. So, you know, we see in the news just in the last couple of days, you know, this back and forth over how much is too much, how long is too long. That's not the vibe we're seeing here in Massachusetts. Here people are saying we are doing the right things, we're doing the right amount, or we could even do a little bit more, and we're in this for the long term. So in terms of how long people think this will last, we've got just under half saying it probably either 2 to 4 or more than 4 months, and another quarter or so saying 1 or 2 months. So nobody thinks, or very few people think, that this is going to be over in just a couple weeks. Not that many think it's under a month. I think that at least here in Massachusetts, there's not a lot of belief that this, you know, sort of Easter deadline is something that we're actually shooting for.
And it seems like everybody, or close to everyone, I mean, these percentages are just really high, are paying attention to the news. They know what's going on. The poll found that 70% know about the lack of tests, and 75% know that hospitals are really facing tough challenges. But I want to switch gears while I have you talking about this to talk about the economic impacts in Massachusetts, and they're really starting to pile up. So what'd you find?
Yeah, so in addition to just what are we supposed to do to help prevent the disease, you know, a lot of those things directly and indirectly cause massive economic upheaval. You know, we can't go to stores anymore, so people aren't spending money at those stores. We can only interact with restaurants in certain very limited ways. Construction shut down, you know, the hospitals are in a totally different situation. So every business is in a different situation than they were even a couple weeks ago. So what we asked is, have you lost a job since the coronavirus crisis began? Have you lost some portion of your paycheck? And the percentage of people that say they've lost a job is 16% of people in Massachusetts. I haven't actually seen any official unemployment statistics, but that is a staggering number of people who say that they've lost a job since this began. It's actually in keeping with some of the forecasts that I've seen about what the unemployment rate might look like during the period of social distancing. Looking at another question, among those who are still employed, 28% of people say that they've lost at least a portion of their paycheck. These numbers are bad on their own, but then when you actually dig into them a little bit, they're even worse for people who are already in some degree of economic trouble. So for instance, the percent of people who have lost some portion of their paycheck, when you break that out by last year's household income, among the lowest income households, 44% say that they've lost some portion of their paycheck. And then that ticks down as you go, as you sort of climb the economic ladder, till you get to those making over $150,000. There you've only got 13% saying they've lost a portion of their paycheck. That still would be a huge number under normal times, under normal economic times, you know, double-digit percentages experiencing basically wage loss.
So, Steve, I mean, it seems like things are only going to get worse before they get better. This poll was taken before Governor Charlie Baker issued a stay-at-home order, or a stay-at-home advisory, I should say, and ordered non-essential businesses closed. So, I mean, what should we be expecting for next week?
Well, it's certainly possible that the numbers could continue to move. I mean, in a certain way, a lot of what Charlie Baker said, people are already doing, right? I mean, people were, in many cases, already staying home and already doing minimizing social contact and so forth. So a lot of the changes that are going to happen had happened already. It's not like we're going from a fully functioning economy to a stay-at-home order. Even so, you know, that's one of the things that's good and interesting about a tracking poll is that you can see, you know, on a day-to-day basis, how are these things changing? I mean, obviously, there's some level of imprecision with just statistical margins of error and so forth, but it does allow us to see post that order, you know, what have the changes looked like? Has there been an uptick in the percentage of people saying that they're losing wages and so forth? So I'd say keep an eye on that as the next releases come out, and it will give us a sense of, you know, what other economic challenges we're facing.
All right. Well, we'll be keeping our eyes on this poll in the weeks ahead. And my esteemed co-host, Steve Cazella, thanks for taking a turn in the hot seat.
Oh, you know, it's something we all got to do. Coronavirus is having an impact on just about every aspect of our lives, including how we elect our public officials. Newton City Councilor Becky Walker Grossman is running for Congress in the Massachusetts 4th Congressional District, and while this primary election is not until September, coronavirus is already affecting the campaign, with more changes possibly in store. Councilor Grossman joins us on the line to talk about it. Welcome.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys today.
Well, we're glad to have you, and I know that it's not our usual cushy, you know, Horse Race Global Media Empire Headquarters Studios. So thanks for joining us from whatever your current situation is.
No, absolutely. We're all finding our way to innovate in this really difficult and unprecedented time.
So before we actually dive into how campaigning has changed, let's just start with your candidacy itself. Tell us why you're running for Congress and a little bit about the driving forces that pushed you into the race.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, to all of you who are listening out there, I hope that everybody's staying safe and healthy at home during this incredibly difficult time. And to those of you who have been directly affected by the virus, have a loved one who's been affected by the virus, and the economic ramifications of what we're all going through, my heart is with you. I got into the race for Congress with the fierce urgency of a mom who is fed up by what is going on in this country and determined to make change. My kids are 8 and 5. My daughter Madeline's in third grade. My son Jack is in kindergarten. And I wake up every day thinking about what is going to safeguard the future for the generations to come, what the planet is going to look like a generation from now, how families are going to have access to affordable universal healthcare coverage and what we need to do to get to that place, how we're going to keep our kids safe at school, how we're going to ensure that when my kids grow up, they're going to have access to quality, affordable childcare. And right now, I think in the coronavirus situation and crisis that we're facing, these issues are only becoming more pronounced. And we're seeing how ramifications of a lack of things like paid sick leave, a lack of affordable healthcare, a lack of affordable childcare, are really front and center, and how people are hurting out there. And that's why I'm running and why I got in the race.
So let's talk about, you know, the time between you got into the race and where we're sitting now. It feels like the entire world has just totally changed. So how are you adapting and campaigning in this really unprecedented time of a global pandemic, social distancing? How are you making it work?
Yes, it definitely it definitely does feel as though the world changed, and it has. We, first and foremost, our campaign is focused on the health and safety of our community and on being there to support the community, to support our residents and neighbors. We have been thinking hard about how to move forward in a safe and responsible way with the campaign, and think that it's really important to continue having those conversations about the issues that are still on people's minds and that our community still wants to talk about and cares about and are at stake in this election. I'm proud that we have been innovative in pivoting really quickly to virtual ways of connecting with voters and with our community. We were one of the first campaigns to launch a series of virtual town halls and had a really successful one last week with tons of engagement, great questions. We are mobilizing our volunteers to be reaching out virtually using the phone, using social media, using platforms like Zoom and Google Hangouts and Facebook Live to be able to continue to have both small group conversations as well as larger group conversations.
I have to ask, because for many of us, in the last week has been sort of an exercise in hilarity, as you know, people who have never used video conferencing technology before are trying to figure it out, and people dropping, people who don't know how to use it, mute themselves, people pointing their camera in the wrong direction. What has it actually been like? What have those town halls been like? Has it been pretty seamless, or has it been a bit of a learning curve as people are trying to figure out how to engage with the new technologies?
Oh, definitely a learning curve. There definitely are all kinds of funny moments, including times that my, you know, kids run into the room and, you know, yell inappropriate things at the camera in the middle of them. One of which occurred in our first town hall. you know, I think everybody is rolling with it right now and, you know, giving each other a little bit of slack as we all figure it out. And, you know, and each day we're getting better at it and finding new ways to use technology in a creative way. But also making sure that, you know, those who are on the other end of the communication have what they need to be able to communicate with us. And also being mindful of the fact that there are a lot of folks out there who don't necessarily have the access to devices to even be able to participate in that same way. So to make sure that we're being mindful of that, supporting people as much as we can, and also reaching out in lots of different ways, including phone and the mail and other safe ways of communicating.
So you've been out, I mean, I guess digitally out talking to people. You've been thinking a lot about this. Has your campaign and the issues that you're running on, have they shifted at all? I mean, are people looking for different things from a potential member of Congress than they were maybe a month or two ago?
Well, I think people are really fed up with the lack of leadership that we're seeing from the president. I just think it has been appalling how he has led from the beginning of this crisis with disinformation, with bias, at times speaking in a racist way, and really downplaying what we're hearing from health and medical professionals. And I think first and foremost on people's minds with the coronavirus, they're looking for clarity, transparency, information, wanting to know where the tests are, how they can take care of themselves, their families, their neighbors, what kind of relief we're going to provide to people because they need it now. Rent checks are coming up due on April 1st. How are families going to make their way through that? So undoubtedly, I think that is first and foremost on people's minds and are looking for clear leadership on these points. However, I also think that what we're going through has further served to underscore the issues that were important before this crisis and are going to be important after this crisis. That includes economic inequality. And the fact that in the 4th District, there's a 5 times differential in annual median household income from the north to the south part of the district. Many of the underlying economic issues that are at play there are only further on display as we see who the folks who are hardest hit by this crisis are and how we're going to support them. Issues like having universal quality, affordable healthcare for everyone, and having a system that prioritizes people's health and wellness is, of course, on display right now in this time of crisis. But once we get on the other side of it, it's just as important to make sure that we are focusing on that and on so many of the other issues that people are facing right now, things like the childcare crunch, the fact that even in good times when we're not at crisis, we know how hard it is for folks to find childcare, afford childcare, and thinking now about how we're going to keep those childcare providers afloat and come out on the other side of this. Those issues are still on people's minds, and they still want to have those conversations, and we still want to be there to advocate for those shared values.
So we just released our the second round of polling that we've been doing on the coronavirus's impact here in Massachusetts, and found, to your earlier point, that the impacts of job losses and the impacts of losses in wages since this began are dramatically disproportionate by things like whether you're hourly or salaried, things like your household income, whether or not you work part-time or full-time, with just many more job losses, many more wage losses concentrated among those who are already more economically vulnerable. Do you think that what the federal government is doing is on the right track as far as dealing with that reality, or what else should they be doing to try to grapple more effectively with the disproportionate impact?
Well, I think what we need to be doing is getting cash in the hands of those who need it immediately. And that means not putting administrative roadblocks in the way that slow down the period of time for those families who need that cash to be able to pay their rent, to be able to afford groceries. We need to be getting that in the hands of people right away, and it needs to be a meaningful amount of money. Obviously, just this morning, we're seeing that a compromise has been struck and that we're moving forward. I think we're going to need to do more as this continues and really be thinking about The workers and individuals who are relying on that cash payment to make it through, as well as the small businesses who are looking right now and trying to figure out, how am I going to make payroll? How are we going to preserve the most jobs? We need to be thinking harder about providing that relief and backstop for those small businesses and how they're going to be able to come out on the other side of it. I think that conversation, I'm glad to see that we're beginning with a package and moving forward. I think we're going to have to watch this very, very closely and continue to do more as this crisis unfolds to make sure that we are supporting those people who are worried about the roof over their head and the food on their table.
And I've got one more question for you before we wrap it up. Even just the mechanics of getting on the ballot have been kind of messed up by this pandemic. So we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show about the signature requirements to get on the ballot. What would you like to see happen with those?
So I think there's really two major issues at play when you think about that. The first is the public health element of signature gathering in the traditional sense, when, as you know, folks would be out with clipboards and pens and handing them back and forth to one another. And I mean, that is that's a major public health problem at this moment. And thinking about gathering signatures in that way just really flies in the face of everything we're hearing from our public health and medical professionals, and is not showing leadership at this point. And then the other part of it is the importance of being able to proceed with our democratic process, having a full, fair election on time, and the real importance of that, and making sure that voters have the full range of choices of candidates for these seats that they deserve and will want to choose from, and making sure that people have access, the candidates have access to be able to be on the ballot for those reasons. So whatever the change is, I think there's a number of different precedents we've seen from other states, whether it's reducing the signature requirement. We've seen some states get rid of it entirely. There's any number of different ways we can go about it that would be appropriate. And I really urge the legislature and our leadership to make some change here.
All right. Well, Newton City Councilor and candidate for Congress, Becky Walker-Grossman, thank you so much for joining us virtually today.
Thanks for having me, and stay safe out there, everybody.
So that, of course, would bring us to where we would usually do trivia and bore you all with mundane details about the history of Massachusetts. But because we know you're all stuck inside and have changed many things about your life, the question last week that we asked you was, what's something that makes you smile, something you've been leaning on in this time of isolation, like books, movies, TV shows, recipes, and so forth? And we got some good answers on Twitter, Stephanie.
That's right. And we got a lot of great answers. Steph Solis, who's a reporter for Mass Live, recommended The Little Hours, which is an Aubrey Plaza movie. Sam Garber from the Massachusetts High School Republicans, he recommended Goodfellas, always a classic. Megan Kelly from WBUR recommended Hobbs and Shaw. And Brian Jankunis, one of our active Republican political watchers on Twitter, recommended his two seasons of Burn Notice that he watched in 1 week. He said it's like 2007 all over again.
And of course, Fever Pitch is always a recommendation that Stephanie would like to add. I think Jen recommended Twilight, if I'm not mistaken. Am I getting that right?
I think Jen had watched Twilight several times last weekend.
Yeah, that's what she told us anyway. not actually, but Jen, hi, we love you. Hope you're doing well. Anyway, so the question for this week is, what's something you wish you had in your coronavirus bunker where you are self-quarantined and self-isolating that you don't have? What's the item you forgot to buy and really wish that you could just run out and grab? So send us your answers on Twitter, email us, text us, do whatever it is you do to get a hold of us. But for now, that's the time we have today. I'm Steve Cazella of the Massing Polling Group.
And I'm Stephanie Murray. Our excellent producer is Libby Gormley. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it and rate and review us. So thank you so much for listening, and we will be back next week.